The gentleman I'm introducing has a fabulous little name tag. It's his unofficial gold name tag. And on it, he says that I'm not supposed to tell you, or I don't need to know much about him to introduce him. But the little name tag says a lot, and I'd like him to explain it to us. What it says is, Ray O.K., Chairman and CEO. He's from Miami, and I'd like to hear more.
My name is Ray O'Keefe. I'm an alcoholic. I'm also an adult first cousin of a dysfunctional alcoholic. And I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous a long time. And you can tell by looking at me, I've been somewhere for a long time. And it says Chairman and CEO here, and if I have to explain that to you, sir, I'm amazed that you are an attorney. But I'm practicing love and tolerance, as I do on a daily basis. It is a great honor to be asked to speak to the lawyers meeting here at the International Convention, and also a greater pleasure because I'm here with my real wife, who is... Who's over there, sitting over there. You probably know her when she was playing tennis professionally as Red Fitzpatrick. She was Bill Tilden's mixed doubles partner and very well known if you're over 70 years of age. That's her glaring at me over there, the redhead of mine. Well, being a lawyer didn't have very much to do with my alcoholism. I would have been a lawyer one way or the other. Everybody else in my family was. But I ended up sober, and I found out I was a lawyer, and that makes it interesting because you live in a nice house, and you drive to meetings in a BMW, and it's a great thing to be a lawyer and be sober. And I was one of those... I was the star of my law school class. That will not surprise anyone. I was the one that my classmates said, this is the one we watch, this is the star. And about 10 years after that, I was sitting in this chair where I used to drink, and I had a bottle of vodka on the floor. It was room temperature, which is the way vodka was designed to be drunk. And I was sitting in my chair, setting fire to it from time to time. But it never really flamed because I also peed in it regularly. And so it just sort of smoldered there. And I was in a sort of, like John, I was sort of in a darkened room. Some people called it a den. She called it the cave. And this enormous light used to go on, and then it would go up, and then it would go on, then it would go up, and then it would go on. Those were the days passing by. And I would sit there and I would brood. Oh, I would brood. It was very terrible the way I would brood. And I would think, God, you know, just 6 years ago, I was the youngest tenured professor of law in the United States. And those rotten, dirty, unprincipled bastards made me resign. Oh, this is terrible. And I would have a few more slugs on my room temperature vodka. And I would think, one of these days, you rotten bastards, you'll see, boy. You'll watch. I'll get some dry clothes, and I'm going to get a typewriter, and they're all here for me, by God. And oddly enough, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1965, it was not the alcohol that brought me here. I could have had some more to drink. I could have. They were still making Rocker. And I would get up from time to time, and I would go. I practiced a little bit. I had been fired as a teacher, but I still had a license. And I specialized in continuances and adjournments. And I had an all-purpose affidavit which covered just about everything, and I also specialized in retainers and refreshers and things like that. And I didn't, it wasn't as though I was hurting anyone. I had a family, I had a wife, 7 children, and it wasn't as though I was interfering with anybody else's life. I was just sort of brooding there. And I wasn't brooding because I was alcoholic. I was brooding because I'm Irish. And the Irish brood, the Irish are great brooders and maudlin. And I would read Irish poetry and cry a lot. And of course, the Dick Van Dyke Show was very popular. And I used to, that was some very interesting stuff on the Dick Van Dyke Show. And there was also the Sunrise Semester. I was learning French and Spanish. And came on at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then nobody else around was talking to me at 5 o'clock in the morning, so I would, she would say something in French, I would say something in French, and we'd all drink. And as John says, sometimes the television was on and sometimes it wasn't, and it did not seem to make a hell of a lot of difference. And so one day I called this lawyer I knew, and he had been, I used to worry about him when I'd see him around, because he was a terrible drunk, and I don't know why he didn't know any better. I mean, he was an attorney, he didn't have to act like that. But then I thought he had been kidnapped or held hostage or something, because he had disappeared from places where we used to go and practice, a number of bars on Madison Avenue, New York, where I practiced, and he wasn't there at that bar. Turned out he had gotten sober in AA, so I called him. And it wasn't the drinking that made me call John. What made me call him was the terror. I couldn't live with the terror. I was in a state of, as our book says, I was in a state of complete, utter, incomprehensible demoralization. And he came and he talked to me. I've never been able to be responsive as he has been to me. And I said, what do you think I should do? He said, I think you should not drink and go to the meetings. I said, you really don't seem to understand my problem. I said, I'm associated in the practice of law with a group of incompetents. He said, well, you're very lucky to have a job at all. And if I were you, I would not drink and go to meetings. It might get a little better. I said, well, I have a totally misunderstanding wife who's intolerant and impatient and lacks all of the civilized habits she once had and doesn't speak to me. And he said, well, I think you should not drink and go to meetings. I said, I'm also being victimized by the Bankers Trust Company because I have a summons here and there's some misunderstanding about a loan application which I have filed. He said, well, if you don't drink and go to meetings, that might get a little better. And I thought there was no dialogue there. And he never got any better either. I would say to him, I don't feel well. He'd say, well, this is as good as you'll ever feel. And then the ultimate, of course, is when I said, geez, I'm a nervous wreck. What should I do? He said, hang on. I said, hang on. How do you hang on? He said, let go. I said, geez. So on November 24th, 1965, I showed up here. And I don't have to tell you the rest of it. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Greatest thing in the world. This morning I woke up at about 4:30. I don't know if that's because I'm in East Coast time all because of the excitement of being at another international convention, or even in anticipation of this meeting. But in any event, there I was this morning at 4:30 in the room. So I ordered up a lifetime supply of coffee from the room service, and I was looking for something, and I took out the Gideon Bible is in my room, and I took out the Gideon Bible because I don't have it with me, some of the stuff I usually read in the morning. And I read this morning in the Gospel of Luke about the mercy of God. It tells a story there, my favorite biblical story, of this man who had two sons. And the younger son came to him and said, "I'd like my inheritance." And the father tried to talk him out of that. But against the father's judgment, he gave his son the money. And it said in the story that he went to a far place, and he found women, and he found wine, and he found companions, and he engaged in riotous living. I wonder what that was.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good to me. But of course, the money ran out. The ladies went away, and so did his friends, and he found himself working, attending someone's pigs, and he was eating with the pigs. And this is no place for a nice boy from a Jewish home to find himself. So he thought to himself, "I will return to the house of my father, and I will ask him for a job as a servant. And in my father's house, even the servants live better than this." So he began that journey back to his father's home. And the word came to his father that his son was coming back. And the story says the father recognized him a long way off and went to greet him. And he threw himself on his son's neck and kissed him. And the son said, "I'm not worthy to live with you. Just let me work as a servant." And the father said, "No. You are my son who was dead, and now you live. You are my son who was lost, and now you are found." And he said to his servants, "Prepare a party and bring out the clothing, the good clothing and the jewelry. And cook a fatted calf, and we'll have this. We will be merry, for my son is home." And in the meantime, the other son, who had never left home, came back from working in his father's field, and he saw all of this going on. And he asked one of the servants, "What is this?" And they said, "Your brother has returned, and he was angry, and he would not go to that party." And the father came out of the house, and he said to him, "Come to this party and greet your brother." And the son complained, and he said, "I've been here all this time, and I've always worked for you, done anything you asked. You have never once had a party like this for me." And the father said to him, "You are my son, and everything I have is yours. But this is my son who was lost and is now found. And this is my son who is dead and now lives." And I thought in that context of this meeting and of this program. And I like to think, because I'm Irish and romantic, I like to think that all of us are prodigal sons. I was. I went far from him. And when I returned, he started a party. It's been going on for 25 years. It's a hell of a party. I have seen Alcoholics Anonymous in every part of this country, in every part of Canada and some other foreign countries. There came a time in, I don't know, in the 70s somewhere, just as Ted was talking about, there came a time I found myself explaining to the widow of a lawyer why he had died. I explained to her that he really did care for her and the kids, that he really meant to take out life insurance, that he really was a good-intentioned lawyer, but that he drank, and that when he killed himself, he really didn't mean that. Didn't mean to hurt anyone, but he drank. And I thought, perhaps there's some way that our profession can do something to help this. And I talked to Ted. And just about that time, you remember that lawyer came in. I had a bar case, somebody who had a misunderstanding about escrow accounts. A victim of bad breaks. And I wondered some more if I could do something about that. So because I'm brash and blunt and the way I am, I started to agitate. And we finally got a committee going, New York State Bar Association Committee, which is still going. Doing fine. And there's been some assistance to lawyers. And the function of that committee and the function of ILAA and the function of all of the state programs, as I see it, is simply to identify the alcoholic lawyer and bring him to Alcoholics Anonymous, period. We are not, and I am not in the business of defending people, excusing them, but I think we have an obligation to find them, to identify them, and to bring them to Alcoholics Anonymous so they can join the party. Sometimes lawyers are difficult, as you know, to deal with. Not as difficult as doctors. But when you get finished with all the legal bravado and bombast and bullshit, what you have is a frightened, terrified lawyer. Someone like me. No idea what to do or how to go about it. But this program and the power that sustains this program is so enormous, the greatest power that has ever visited this earth. That power can reach into his life as it reached into mine and can say, this is my son who was lost. This is my son who was dead. And you and I have an obligation to our brothers. A special obligation, I think, to our brothers. Because we have the opportunity, because of our backgrounds, to reach him. To bring him here. Not that he's special, but he thinks he is. So we kid him along, you know. We used to run a lunch up there for lawyers. I'd say, you're not going to AA meeting? I can't go to an AA. Fine, just come to lunch. Come to lunch. You know? We kid them along, but we bring them here, and the power is here. See, the power is in this room. The power is in this meeting. The work is in our home groups, this convention and others like it, and I go to 20 or 30 a year. You know, it's not really AA, that's a party. It's a party. AA is your home group. AA is taking that DUI, taking that landlord, tenant, taking that crap, and telling you, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it, I'll do it. You go to meetings. You don't drink. Don't worry about this other stuff. Give me that. That's not. Don't worry about that. I'll take care of it. They think you're Clarence Darrow, you know. But it's basically noblesse oblige, is it not? We have so much. Excuse me. And they have so little. So you give it out. Simple gratitude, no? Next September, ILA will meet in Boston. It's a good party. You should come to it. He doesn't let me speak every year. That's why I think it's a good party. I was writing notes when everybody was talking because I thought I'd have to get even with a few of these guys. But I don't think so. I go around and speak. When I speak, I don't speak about drinking much. I don't think it has much to do with anything. I speak about the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. I speak about the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, this book. He gave me this book. He said, read this book. He said, read the black part. Pencil, you don't need that. Just sit there and read it. You'll learn. And the book says all over the place just what I try to say all the time. They read it every meeting. They say that God has all power. May you find him now. It says that as we draw near to him, he disclosed himself to us. And it says that he does not make hard terms with those who bargain, who seek him. He does not make hard terms with those who seek him. And what are the terms that God made with me when I sought him? They are the terms that Bob told us in his last talk. You remember when they gathered in Cleveland for the first of these international conventions and Bob spoke for the last time? And he said he thought the whole thing over since 1935 and it was really love and service. Those are the terms that God made with me when I sought him. These are his terms to me. You come to this program. You come to your group. You give them love and service. And I will reveal myself to you. And he revealed himself to me in the terms of our program and our traditions as an ultimate authority and a loving, kind guy. One who spared me and spared us all. And when I end speaking, and I'm ending now because I think the meeting is long, I talk about a pamphlet in Alcoholics Anonymous which it's been very dear to me over the years. It's called A Member's View. And in that pamphlet, at the very end, the author takes a biblical turn. And he recalls a time when John the Baptist was once again languishing in one of Herod's prisons. And John sent two of his friends to inquire of his cousin Jesus as to whether or not he was the Messiah. And so these two men found the Lord, and they walked with him. And they said to him one day, are you the Messiah? Are you the one that we have been waiting for? Or should we wait for another? And the Lord really didn't answer that question. But he said to these two men, go back to John, and tell John only what you have seen, and only what you have heard. Tell John that the blind see, and the lame walk. Tell John that the deaf can hear, and that the sick are made well. And tell John that the poor have the gospel brought to them. In my early training, I was told that the word poor in that context could mean poor in spirit. And everyone knows that the word gospel simply means good news. And so, my dear, dear brothers in happy lawyers meeting assembled at the great international convention of 1990, if you will accept a report from me, based upon my years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will tell you only what I've heard and only what I've seen. And based upon that observation, it seems to me that the blind do see and the lame do walk. And I know that the deaf can hear. And most certainly, the sick are made well. And I have seen over and over and over again through the longest day and into the darkest night the good news of our program
brought to the alcoholic who still suffers, the poor in spirit. God bless you.